Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode. So we got Mr. Arford, guitarist for Carnifex. How are you, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. First and foremost, just want to say thanks for taking the time to talk with me tonight.
Yeah, of course, man.
Where did you grow up at? Where are you originally from?
I was born 1983 in Southern Orange County, a little town called Fountain Valley. I guess they have a hospital there. My mom and dad lived there at the time. So, yep.
Is that where you're living right now?
No, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay. What's weather like right now? Pretty warm?
Looks like it's 78. Sunny.
It beats it over here in the Midwest. I'm in Indiana, and right now it is 25 degrees out with lots of snow.
Oh, man. That's what I got. My usual Warzone crew, they're all from Montana. So they're like half of them are like, because they're not in the same area. So half of them are like north, the other half are south. So like every time we get, I was like, it's fucking windy up here, like fucking snowing down here. And then it like switches. And so yeah, they're always talking about how it's snowing and shit. And they're like, what's going on there? And I'm like, I don't know. The sun's out. It's fucking normal. It's boring as hell.
Yeah, I guess the snow brings a little bit of excitement out here, but not too much with it. You know, after a while, I'm just so fucking, I'm over it. And I'm ready to have warm weather out. And
it's I had to spend time, my dad and I lived in Utah for a few years, and at one point his job had him going in super early. He was managing like a private air fuel thing for like rich dudes and their fucking private jets and their Mormon dudes with 100 wives and shit. And so he would leave before I went to school. So there was no way he could take me, and there was no bus stop near our house. So I always, every day it was like walking 3 miles to school in the fucking snow by myself. Like, I mean, I wanted to say I hated it, but I kind of didn't. I don't know why. Like, I mean, I think at the time I was like, this fucking blows. I hate this fucking shit. Why don't I have a car?
Right.
But I don't remember hating it that much. Like, I feel like I would remember hating it a lot more. And then while I don't miss it, I miss it.
Yeah, I can see like, that for sure.
And I'm a huge thunderstorm person, which is kind of why I'm stoked to be here.
Me too. But
with the way the like climate change is happening, we're not really getting storms.
Really?
The last 2 years, we've had like 2 or 3 storms, like really good ones. And I missed half of them because I wasn't home.
All right.
Then like every time I leave here to go to Cali to do band stuff, it rains or thunderstorms here. So I miss it every fucking time. I never get to see it. So I miss weather, but I also miss living in Cali. Like I plan to live the rest of my life by the beach.
I see you got a master sword and a high. I can't remember how they say it. Hylian shield.
Yeah, I went on vacation a few years ago in South Carolina. We went to Medieval Times, and they had a bunch of swords for sale, and then they had a few master swords. It's not in any condition to swing around, but it does look cool on the wall.
Dude, what's your favorite Zelda Saga game out of all the series?
Ocarina of Time, hands down.
That's what I was talking with guy, can't think of his name off the top of my head, singer for Silent Planet, Garrett Russell, and we were talking about games and whatnot, and we both kind of agreed, you know, there's a tie between Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time, and I have to agree with you. It's Ocarina of Time for me because you get, you know, two really big segments of, you know, the Young Link stages, and then you got the Old Link with all those, you know.
I love it. And then going back and forth to finish the missions and stuff.
Yeah, dude, I fucking love it.
There was something about it. And it has the same kind of story that anybody my age grew up on Zelda with. Like, you start young, like even the old games, like the Link to the Past and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, like, the thing you do at first is you find the shield, or you find S shield, the Deku shield, and then you get the little sword from the thing, and then you go in the Deku tree. Like, it's sort of a reimagining of one of those older games, because you, like, it's the same missions, but in fucking 3D, 64-bit.
Dude, it was amazing. It was like, crazy.
What? And you get to play in Ocarina, and there's cutscenes, and it's like, you feel it, and then like all the levels and the missions and the dungeons, like, man, it was such, like, not only on like a revolutionary style console, but a whole new way to see Zelda. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of people, younger people, seem to like the newer games, but I know that there's a certain age group, like right in between. Everybody loves the Nintendo games who remember them, but most people are Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask. Like, those are like the two biggest Zelda games, aside from Link from a Past and the old Nintendo stuff. Those will always be amazing classics. But
what's your favorite dungeon, you would say?
I like the water dungeon, actually.
Dude, are you talking about with the to getting the actual, like, the ruby, the what is it, the Zoran Sapphire? Are you talking about actually the adult one? Dude, I hated that one. It is so fucking hard. You got the water levels you got to do. It's so tricky.
I got lucky because my buddy let me borrow his guide for the thing, and so I got it right before I got to that dungeon, and it told me about when you go in, you drop down and go to the right to the first, and you go all the way to the bottom, and you have to pull that one block forward. And then you go do everything else. And if you don't pull that block, you don't get out.
Yeah, that's what I find that so every time I, you know, because I play it multiple times. Every time I always fuck up and I always don't do that. And I'm just like, you know, running back and forth. And yeah,
you have to go back and reset everything just so you can pull that block out. Yeah. And I kind of like how they did that. Like, if you do that one thing, you're going to get out. And if you don't know about it, you're never leaving. Right. It's kind of cool. And I met a lot of people who didn't have the guide, and they fucking hated it. And I was like,
I'm one of them people.
Go back, reset it, do this thing, and then you'll get out. And like a week later, like, I got it. I fucking got it. It was cool as fuck.
My favorite is a tie between, like, boss wise with those two games, Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time. I'd have to say for Ocarina of Time, it'd be Bongo Bongo and the Shadow Temple. That was pretty wicked.
So much fun.
Dude, it was such a great game.
And I fuck up a lot in the Shadow Temple, so I get mad. His hands that come out, they grab me like every fucking time. Right. And I'm like, I know how to beat these things, and I can't.
It's that, and then with Majora's Mask, I'd have to say it would be the last one. I can't remember the name. The big worms, you know, you got to go, and you got to have the statues, and you got to, like, flip the – it literally flips the whole map different ways when you – play different it was a long process.
I'm bad at that stuff.
Like you said, when I played those games back in the day, I'd have to go on Game Facts and look up the tutorials and the walkthroughs, because ain't no fucking way I could figure that out on my own. There's no way.
I kind of like I miss not having the internet, because it just forced you to figure shit out. So like when I was playing Ocarina of Time, I didn't have internet. I mean, it sort of did, but, like, all I knew that, like, there were Mortal Kombat fatalities on there, and that was kind of all I knew.
Yeah.
I didn't think anybody was posting guides, so it's like, if it's a puzzle game or something, it's like, just figuring it out, that's it. Your buddy at school knows the trick. And
right.
When I was playing Metal Gear Solid on PS1, my buddy at school was like, hey, when you get to the Mind Doctor guy, you have to put the first controller in the second controller slot or you won't beat him. And I was like, what? So I tried to beat him without it. And like, he knows what you're doing because the game AI reads the inputs of your controller. So it reacts before you can hit him. So you never get out of the office. Like, there's another way to beat him. But the easy cheat was to just plug your controller into number two. And then you just walk up to the desk and blast his ass. And that's it. It's like easy. It's so easy. Like, it's the one part of that game that I played. I played that game 1,000 times and I don't really remember it because when you do that, the scene is over. You beat him instantly. There is no fight. You just win. Like, he's the one bad guy you run into that's over like so fast that you barely remember he's in the game.
That's funny as hell. Now, in your opinion, what would you rather have? Would you rather have, I ask everybody this that plays those games, would you rather have a part three to that saga of, you know, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, or would you rather have those both games in a, like a Twilight Princess graphics type game setup with reimagined graphics, all up to date, new graphics?
Yeah, I'd like to play Ocarina of Time with new graphics because I got it on the 3DS, mm-hmm. So I played it in 3D and I was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah,
it so was... it would be nice to see. I would actually be really stoked to replay that game with like an Unreal Engine overdub. Like,
yeah, dude.
Just make it look like it doesn't have to play different because I feel like the controls are fantastic.
Yeah,
so just make it look good and then give it up to 4K resolution so I can play it on my 1440p monitor at 144 hertz, like, right. Port it for PC so I can get high frame rates and a high resolution and then give me clean graphics. I'll replay that game 1,000 times,
dude. That would be so crazy. Look at
the water and
like, yeah, just to see the sword swing and, you know, the fairy dust coming off of the fairies and every little detail fucking be crazy, you know, cutting grass, breaking crates.
Oh man, all that shit, that'd be so sick.
So aside gaming, your thing that you do is you play the flute for Carnifex, right?
Yeah, the main flute and the skin flute. So I have two jobs.
Right. So your calling is guitar with those guys. What influenced you to want to pick up a guitar in the first place?
Not having friends.
So just hanging out at home, and you're like, I'm just going to pick the guitar up.
All the people that I wanted to hang out with at school, because I mean, my whole life growing up, I never really stayed at any one school for more than like a year.
Oh, okay.
So I've never been able to develop lifelong friendships, which kind of sucks. But so every time I was at a school, the people that I emotionally or whatever gravitated toward, I would try to just be into the things they were into. So maybe I could have a group of friends to hang out with. And all these dudes, like, I just got into, like, before I moved to Utah, which is where I picked up the guitar, I was into rap and stuff. And then my buddy showed me Weezer and Offspring Smash. And that started me toward finding my way to where I'm at now. And then I met these dudes and they were into Deftones and stuff. And one of them played drums and they're bass player and they had one guitar player. And then like another couple of people played guitar. So I was like, I'll play guitar and then I can hang out with these guys. But it didn't work. So they still thought I was a loser. But I just kept playing guitar anyways. Because I was like, hey, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could play my favorite band songs on this thing. And then I just started learning Deftones songs and 311 songs and Slipknot songs. And then I learned about other tunings. So then it moved on to like learning Fear Factory songs and like the heavier Slipknot stuff. And then Iowa came out and I started learning Glassjaw. Like, it was just like, anytime I heard a song from a band that I was sick, like I thought it was awesome, I'd go on the internet, try and find the tabs. If I couldn't find the tabs, I'd sit there for hours and find the notes and figure the songs out to the best of my ability. And then just, it just went from there. So I didn't get friends, but I got a new skill. So that was cool.
Hell yeah, dude. What was the first brand of guitar that you got?
It was a Yamaha Stratocaster from Costco.
Do you still have it?
No.
Do you wish you did?
Nah, because it's just it's a piece of shit. I mean, Yamaha makes good instruments. Like, it was a decently made guitar, but I mean, it's a Fender Strat ripoff. It has whatever fucking Yamaha garbage plastic pickups. Yeah. Like it was, it's not a good guitar. It's not anything that like, oh, I wish I had it because the sound or the feel, like, nah. The first guitar I bought, I still have. So
what kind of guitar are you using now?
Mainly right now, for because we're recording and stuff, I'm using this
RGB. Shit. That thing is gorgeous, man.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
So you're with Ibanez, right?
Yeah, I've been with them for over 10 years. So
how did you land that endorsement?
I guess I don't know, because I mean, like, the business email stuff doesn't go through any of us, it just goes through Scott.
Oh, okay.
Just because it's more streamlined that way, and he just kind of, he started the band, so he was kind of like running things, and it just makes sense that all the emails and info go through him. And then if it's a whole band thing, he forwards to us, you know, like, he's 100% open. He doesn't hide stuff from us. It's not like this fucking, you know, this is Scott's show and we're all just kind of hanging out. Like,
yeah,
even though he came up with the idea and started the band and got Sean and then they built that, he's 100% transparent about everything, and he gives us a voice and he lets us help make decisions. So it's not Scott deciding what we do, you know, unless it's like an obvious fucking, like, no fucking brainer, like, yes, we're doing this, or, you know, the whole band's right, definitely gonna be on board. Like, if he knows, then it's a no brainer and then he just tells us. But otherwise we vote on things, you know, merch, everything, like even album art. He gets album art from somebody. Like, he'll go on his own, find an album artist and all this other stuff, but he brings everything to us and he goes, you guys like this stuff, are we good, you know? So it's not like that at all. But now I forgot the question because I do that a lot. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, it was just like how that endorsement came about. That's like, right. How you got with Ibanez.
So our temporary booking agent in 2008 or 7, end of 07, 08, it's hard to remember. Is that we were on tour, so I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was around there. Emailed Scott, was like, hey, Ibanez just let me know they have 2 open spots. I was just, they asked if I had anybody that wanted on, and I thought I'd hit you guys up first because you guys are, you know, new and other people already have endorsements. Basically, everybody else he had already kind of had something, and we didn't have anything. So, like, you guys want it? And I have always wanted an Ibanez guitar. Like, when we were touring, I had one. So I was just like, yeah, but I wanted Ibanez stuff. And then when I learned what an endorsement was, I wanted that. And then the call came, and I was like, put it down, put our names, give me the paper, let's sign it. So we did that. And right out of the gate, he was like, you guys get, he signed me, our guitar player at the time, and Fred. And he's like, all you guys, you get 2 free guitars a year. And we were just like, what?
That's
what you guys are starting with? Like, I don't even ever need to change that. Like, I can't even afford to buy another guitar right now, and you're gonna give me 2 free for every year. And then eventually I didn't even have to sign the paper. Like, we got such a good relationship with our guy Mike there that at one point in like 2012, usually he would just email me or whatever the thing. He's like, just print it out, sign it, and let me know whatever. And I was like, hey, it's year's coming up. You need me to sign a thing? He goes, nah, we're on vocal here, so don't worry about it. You just want anything, email me. If I can get it, you'll get it. If I can't, you don't. That's it. He's like, I'm not ever being mad at you, or I'm not going to cuss you out for asking me for anything. So if you see anything, ask me. If I can get it for you, you got it. Otherwise, sorry. That was just kind of it. So now it's just like, whenever I want something, I just email him. So every year when NAMM comes around, I go on the site, oh, what do you guys got? That's nice. And I gather a couple of product numbers, and then I send them off. Like, hey, can I get any of these and these colors? And then either one of them just shows up or emails back. He goes, yeah, here, I'll give you this. So it's pretty fucking amazing, and I'm extremely lucky. And it kind of bums me out when I see people who have something like this just start jumping ship because, oh, I just feel like I want to try these guitars out or these guitars. It's like, dude, this company is giving you free stuff.
Yeah.
And you're not happy? That's not enough. And a lot of dudes like, well, I have ideas for all these guitars, and they won't make me this, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to jump ship, go to these people. And sometimes that kind of sucks because, you know, like, they're trying to build their thing. And like, even though giving away stuff, like having a name go away is tough, you know, and it happens a lot.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. So were you into any bands previous to Carnifex?
No.
No, so okay. So you joined Carnifex after 2 years of them beginning and starting out, right?
Basically, yeah. Okay. I mean, that kind of goes along with the friends thing. You know, I could never get anybody to fucking hang out or
give a fuck, motivated.
And so it was just always me in my fucking bedroom. I mean, I had when I joined the band, my buddy and I were jamming, but I don't know. He felt like he wasn't improving, and that's because he didn't practice, but he wasn't happy with how he played, and he didn't feel like he was going to get better. So he's kind of started giving up, and I could tell every practice we had that, you know, I'm trying to write these, like I wrote 5 songs for us all by myself, and I tried to teach him and we got him down and all this stuff, but he just, I could see every week he was just a little less interested in playing. He still loves the music and shows, but he didn't really, wasn't excited about playing, and he never improved his drum kit. It was just like, you could tell like he was happy to jam, but yeah, he didn't, the idea of a musical career was going away. And then we went to see Remembering Never, Acacia Strain, and somebody else. And the Carnifex lineup at that time opened the show as the local band.
Really?
So me and my buddy stood in the back, and we watched Scott, Sean, Stevie, who was in the band when I joined, and then Travis, who was in the band when I joined on guitar. So I joined those 4 guys that I watched, and then those 2 dudes left and I stayed.
So that's the story behind you joining then, huh?
Yeah, I actually ran into Scott at the show because he was going to sell merch after their set. And I was like, you guys are fucking sick. And he was actually bummed because Travis kind of blew it and he unplugged himself during the set. Like during a breakdown even, it was like kind of an embarrassing moment for that dude. But a week after that show, my buddy who I was jamming with was like, hey, that band Carnifex was looking for a guitar player if you want to go fucking check them out. So I hit him up. Scott and Sean asked me over to their apartment, and then I showed them some riffs I was writing, and they showed me some of their riffs and I played them, and then that was it.
They were like, yeah, come on board, man. Yeah,
pretty much it. Sean was like, Sean and Scott were straight edge at the time, and they could tell, they knew that I was a weed smoker, and Sean took me to the bank. It was like, well, if you're going to be in the band and do shows, we have to get merch, and if you're going to be a member, we're all chipping in for merch, which made sense to me. I was like, that's fine. So I went with Sean to the bank to get some money. He's like, I'll take you. I want to talk to you and ask some questions. First question out of his mouth, he goes, so how much weed do you smoke? He was so worried that I was just going to be that another, you know, I'm like, oh man, I'm too high, let's practice later, right, kind of guy, right. But totally not. So yeah, I could tell he was worried, but I was like, all right, so there's one thing I gotta prove my worth in that department right there. Right. And now Sean's like, you know, he doesn't like the smell of weed. He thinks, you know, there's a lot of weed smokers out there that really piss him off because they're stupid and slow and forgetful. And I get it, and it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's like, you're the only person that I would ever trust to drive this van high with all of us.
That's funny.
Because I'm always high, and I'm like, I always get my shit done. Like, I don't have a fucking problem. Like, I can be stoned as fuck, and people look at me like, is this dude going to remember the set? And it's fine. Flawless set, you know, like, so Sean's not worried about it at all anymore. It's great.
So with your guys' jumping into your guys' songs, Light of My Face on Spotify right now is your number one song, sitting at 4 million streams. What, in your opinion, made this song such a popular one?
It's one of the first deathcore songs ever released. You know, it's gonna, like, anybody that was around when deathcore started, they know, like,
yeah,
it was. I mean, not to say that we are the only band, there's a lot of deathcore bands that started just before us or right around, but as far as surviving,
yeah, you guys are still, yeah.
And at the time, we were looking up to bands like Through the Eyes of the Dead, Dahlia, stuff like that. So there were, you know, we personally as a group, we consider bands like Despised Icon, they're one of the deathcore kings. Like, they literally started the shit. I mean, they have that little bit of noisecore, but, you know, they're a group of death metal and hardcore dudes, and they smashed those two genres together. But with their style, I don't think people really considered it deathcore, but that's like That's some straight deathcore
shit. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I mean, they like Through the Eyes of the Dead and them. They're not accredited in the world as much as other bands for starting deathcore, but you know, we feel now that it's safe enough to say that maybe Suicide Silence, Us, Despised Icon, those are three bands that kind of really brought deathcore out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and we were just a lot of people that were like, at least in my eyes, for us as a band, we were just, we basically were writing what we wanted to hear. And what we were listening to was a bunch of stuff that was sick death metal and stuff, but we weren't really into the solos and stuff as much. We were like, let's just put breakdowns where the solos go.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of that. And I think Suicide Silence had the same idea. And then so did Despised and Through the Eyes of the Dead. You know, Through the Eyes of the Dead has solos, but a lot of times instead of like you feel a solo or something coming, like before deathcore was a thing, you'd be like, oh, here comes the solo.
Yeah, and then it's breakdown heavy fucking nuts.
Yeah, and then you're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, yeah. I thought I was listening to death metal, and then but it's not hardcore breakdowns. Like, they're different. You know, like, they have that pattern. And I think deathcore, I don't know, maybe this is pretentious or something. I have no idea. But I think deathcore kind of, aside from Meshuggah, deathcore kind of made, like, the djent bands like Veil of Maya and stuff, that was a pathway to that stuff.
Because
a lot of deathcore bands, they're not hardcore breakdowns. They have like more of a pattern, and they're a little more complicated.
Yeah.
And then I kind of watched bands evolve into like what Veil of Maya was doing, where there's like older Veil of Maya, a lot of blast beats, some death metal riffs sort of, and then like some strummy stuff, and then really complicated, you know, numbery breakdowns.
Yeah.
Which I gravitated to because I love breakdowns, and I don't like dun 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 dun. Like, I don't like that basic hardcore breakdown, even though the heavy shit. It's boring to me. It's not saying that it's bad. It's just not something my ears perk up to. But
yeah, those breakdowns, you know, when you can just hear the, you know, the lights go dim from it, then the fucking, they're just super bright, and then you feel the room just moving like crazy, and you know, you just feel that, just that fucking huge burst of adrenaline, the hair sticks up back of your neck, like that's the stuff that I live for. I love that, you know. Yep. And you just feel the whole, and you can feel everybody's energy, whether you're in the pit, you're standing, you know, at the back, or you're at the bar, wherever you're at, you can feel that energy when those breakdowns and the room's rattling. Dude, that is the fucking best.
And then, love that. And stuff like that track Pillars,
mm-hmm,
off of that first, what is it? Is that off of Id?
Fourth Veil of Maya?
Yeah.
It's like the instrumental.
Record. Like in the middle?
It's like the instrumental, right? There's like no singing to it. Yeah.
I love like how, like, you have that like calm kind of melody going, and then it sort of builds up, and then this really heavy, complicated breakdown comes in. That's like what you're talking about. Like, that makes the hair.
Yeah.
Like, I could put that song on now, and I've heard it 1,000 times, and it still does that because it has that feeling, and you can feel like, oh, there's gonna be a sick breakdown, and then when it happens, you're like, oh, it's so good.
I know. I love
that. Like, you shake a little and you get goosebumps. You're like, oh, and yeah. So yeah. I love that shit.
So second to that is stuff. Following up with that is Drown Me in Blood, which is sitting at 2 million streams. What is the story behind such a gruesome song title?
I do not know. Scott is the lyric man. He names all the songs and the albums, and he writes all the words all on his own.
So that'd be a question for him then.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people don't know that. And I hate saying like, I don't know what the song's about, but my release is the instrument, and Scott's release is writing. Like, he, you know, him and I are both huge cinephiles. Like, we, and Sean loves movies too, but Sean's like he likes classics movies and stuff. So
yeah,
Sean will kind of watch anything, but he doesn't get into super serious stuff a lot. Like, he loves Jim Carrey movies and stuff like that, which we all do. But I think his love for movies kind of doesn't go a lot deeper than that, which is fine, and there's no problem. But Scott and I like other stuff, and we like fucked up movies, and we like other things. And so so Scott's whole thing is like, he wrote, you know, his graphic novel, and then he was trying to write a pilot for I think like a thriller kind of drama show or something, but
no kidding,
it's just really hard. Like, that's like another passion that I feel it takes 100% of everything. You can't write stuff like that on the side.
Yeah.
Like I can stream on the side. Like I can do game streaming on the side because it just requires the webcam, the mic, and a PC to play video games. So that's an easy enough thing for me to build and make money off of a little bit and grow a community with fans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, but when you try to like write a movie or a show or something, it's like, you know, that's like writing an album. You have to put 100% in it. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to let the pilot go. I was like, I can't do the band and the pilot together. And he's not going to give up on the band. So,
yeah,
but he is working on Death Dreamer Volume 2. But yeah, like Scott's writing and naming the albums, that's where he puts his personal stuff.
Gotcha,
so like a lot of us, we punching bags or video games or guitar or something. Scott's is writing. He writes his poems and he tries to come up with stuff that he can use for lyrics, and then he's able to yell about these words and that all, you know. So we kind of leave the words to him. And I don't, if I write lyrics, it's going to sound like Five Finger Death Punch stuff. So it's not going to be like well thought out, you know, things that make you think. It's going to be like, I fucking hate you, you dumb bitch breakdown. Right. Or whatever, you know, whatever the fucking lines are going to be. It's going to be really dumb lyrics. So it's just funny. Leave it to Scott.
So in 2018, you guys did a cover of Heretic Anthem from Slipknot.
Yeah.
And you played it live all the time when you guys were touring. What was your experience like recording that cover, and how did the crowds react to it?
Well, I mean, I did track that song with our last guitarist, Jordan. And like I put 100% effort in it, and I thought that I had tracked it perfectly and it was fine, but he retracked it because I guess it wasn't good enough. So I didn't track the song, unfortunately. He took it upon himself to retrack it for me, even though it was fine. But I was really stoked to get the song done because I feel like if we were going to cover anybody, it should have been Slipknot. Yeah. And like when we did Angel of Death, I was like, ugh, I'm not a Slayer fan. So it was just kind of like, yeah, all right, we'll do it. And it went over well, which is great. And I liked playing it live. And I'm glad we did it because I haven't read it, but I've heard it. People say that we've done one of the best Slayer covers ever done. That's not my words. I'm not tooting my own horn here. That's what I fucking heard. So that felt good, though. And we were like, well, maybe we should just do some more covers. And then so Scott wanted Head Like a Hole. And then he was like, how about Heretic? And I went, yep. Because that song's already in drop A. So I was like, we can just.
That's a killer song, dude. That's a
great song. And yeah. Even like playing that shit on Warped Tour, man, that was just like it wasn't like an obvious difference between our songs and that song, but you could tell like people were having a real good fucking time listening to that song because Slipknot wasn't there, but we were, and we brought Slipknot with us.
you guys played that. The first time I seen you guys play that, I don't know if you remember, it was in a town called Valparaiso, Indiana, at a venue called Big Shots. And you guys played with Rings of Saturn, Fallujah.
Yeah. Wasn't it? That's that,
I can see that
like really nice kind of bar place, like really nice bar.
The bar was upstairs. Yeah. I can't remember if it was.
I'm trying to remember. I know what tour. I know what tour you're talking about.
I can't remember who else played with you guys. I want to say someone had to drop the tour because their visas weren't good or something like that. There might have been a different tour that I seen there.
Well, that's kind of like every time we get a UK band or a European band on one of our headlining tours, they always cancel because of that. It's like, you guys have toured the US. Do you not know? Like, right. You know, and yeah, one of the times it was 100% out of their control. They were working on their visas and their country got behind and just didn't have their stuff ready for them. So it wasn't on them and they felt bad. But
it was Burn, Lorna Shore, Rings of Saturn, and you guys, Lucha. Despised Icon was only.
They were on the end of it.
Yeah. So
She Must Burn was on the beginning. And then when we, so it was like 4 weeks. Yeah, 4 weeks. Five weeks before Canada with them. Something like that. 4 or 5 weeks. And then when we hit Canada, they flew home and Despised Icon got on the bus. So we were sharing with the She Must Burn. Then they left, and then Despise got on, and we did the last couple weeks with them.
Oh, that's right. You guys were on that big, badass black tour bus, I remember.
Yeah, it was not a badass bus.
It wasn't?
Well, I mean, it would have been if it wasn't a piece of shit. The fucking generator wouldn't stay running, and the bus had problems. And then in the back lounge, they just added three bunks. So they put up this shitty particle board, faux leather wrapped wall against the window. And there's only the one window in the middle where I was sleeping. And some of the cold, like the wall would be ice. So part of my pillow and blanket would be wet half the time on that tour when I got in. Because there's a wall of wet ice next to my fucking bunk. They didn't insulate the goddamn window. And then there was also a cooler in the back that you could fill with ice and drinks. So you had like a second place because the front is a bus for two bands. So the front was like really open, but there wasn't a lot of fridge and cooler space with all the people. So they had another cooler in the back. I think it was like a supposed to be like a, you know, back lounge cooler thing. So you fill this little box that's screwed into the bus filled with ice, and it's supposed to have a drain that goes down into the bus and then out to the ground. The fucking hose came off, and Mike came in one day and sat on the floor in the doorway, and it was soaking his ass. It looked like he pissed out of his ass. And we were like, what the fuck? And the bus driver had to come in and pull the seat out, and pull this fucking shit out. Like, he tore the back lounge apart just to reconnect this hose because they did not put a doorway so you could just get to it. So he had to come back, and the dude was like missing sleep like every day. We were like, dude, we're gonna fucking die because you can't work on the bus. It's like, I mean, we can like turn the generator on and off or whatever we had to do there, but as far as working on the bus, I don't think we're allowed, because if we break something, then we pay the bus company. So the bus driver has to fix everything, and that dude was in there like all day some days just fixing shit. And then like, so like, and we're like, the show's starting and this dude should have been asleep 6 hours ago and he's still at the bus. And we're like, we're just like, dude, we have such a long drive tonight. This guy's going to fucking kill us because he's going to fall asleep. And we didn't wreck or anything, but yeah. So like, the bus is cool. It's really nice having a bus, and I'm not trying to complain about it, but
no, yeah,
it's just like, if you're going to rent a bus out, like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, make it.
Can we just make sure everything works? Can you not just have it roll in, fill it with gas, change the oil, and send it back out? Like, dude, come on. You're running a fucking bus company. Let's get this shit in order here. It was a sick bus though. The front lounge was huge and it had a pop out. So like, while we're driving,
It looked pretty cool, man.
Yeah, while you're driving, it's like, it's so cramped. What the fuck? And then you get to the venue and you're like, yeah, so much room. It's just like, once it's out, there's a whole shelf. It's like a huge seat. There's more seating. It's crazy. And there's like 5 more feet of space. You could fit like you could do a house party in there. Like 15 people would be great.
I remember when at that show, it was when you guys were doing a little bit of a quick sound check before you started your guys' set. And I remember you were up there with your guitar. And you were looking at the sound guy, and I remember my buddy Steven, he does this with every band. He stood up closer towards like the barricade, and you were standing there, you know, like I said, doing a little quick tune sound check, whatever. And I just remember looking over, and he's just like, he looks up at you, and he's just, and I just remember you know, strumming, looking down at him, and he just, it was the fucking funniest thing I saw.
It's good stuff. Yeah, I like doing that.
Yeah. So you guys were previously signed with Victory Records, now with Nuclear Blast. What was the storyline with that process?
Fuck Victory. What's that? it was horrible and great. At the very beginning, Victory was fantastic. Like, at the initial signing, everything was great. So I'll never say anything bad about them getting us out there and doing at least something for us. Like, they did. They got us our picture and name in magazines, and we got on TV, and we were on Headbangers Ball and all this stuff. Not when it mattered. Like, Headbangers Ball was, I don't even think it's on now, but like, when our videos were premiering, it was like fucking 2:30 in the morning on a fucking Saturday. It's like,
oh man,
anyone awake is too fucked up to even realize what's happening.
Right.
And everyone else is asleep. there's no one awake at 2:30 on a Saturday that is stoked about Headbangers Ball anymore. So, I mean, a lot of stuff they did was cool, and it would have been cooler if they'd done it earlier or some way different, but it was just as time progressed, things got dumber and dumber. Like, one of our CD releases, they tried to get us to just stay home.
And that tour on it?
Yeah. Hmm. Like, we were planning a tour, and Tony, like, emails Scott or calls him, and like, hey, this tour is fucking bullshit, don't do it. Scott's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, this tour's dumb. Don't go out with these bands. Don't work with these fucking people. He's just a salty dick about things. And if we're trying to tour or be on a tour booked by this person or that person, he's like, hey, fuck that guy. Don't go out with them. So he's trying to tell us to cancel on this tour because it's not worth it. And we're like, dude, our album's coming out. He's like, just stay home. We'll do press stuff. I'm like, no. We're not going to put an album out and just stay home and play video games, dude. Fuck right. You.
Yeah, do a press.
We're going on tour. Eat shit. And you know, it was just stuff like that. And then like when we first went there, he was like, you guys are card affected. And then he was all about everything, and they got pizza. And then we went the second time we went in there, he grabbed all his stuff and snuck out the back door. He didn't even say hi to us.
Oh Lord.
And then a few people there were like just shitty employees, and then they duped us. Like the one time we went, they gave us these pieces of paper, and they were like, yeah, go ahead and go through all the inventory and everybody pick out 5 things you want, and no big deal. We're like, oh cool, free merch, man. We got like Darkest Hour Postman bags, we got shirts and CDs and all this stuff. Then we got a fucking bill for all that shit.
Oh no.
Like what? Like we would get itemized stuff for, you know, recoup stuff, normal things. And Scott would always look it over, and he looked at it once, and he like messaged us I think Scott got like a CD. He was never really like, oh, free stuff. Yeah, give me that.
Yeah.
So he didn't really take anything, but the rest of us were like, yeah, you know, free shirts. We got some shorts. You know, it was extra clothing for tour and stuff.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
We did that. And then Scott emailed, he's like, yeah, all that stuff you guys got, they're billing us. And we were like, what? And he's like, did they say we had to pay? We were like, no, they just handed us the sheets and told us to pick shit out. That was it. And he was like, yeah, you're right. That is what they said. So it's like fucking, and we should have known right out of the gate, because Tony said, hey, I want you guys to come do a showcase before we got signed. So that was drive to Chicago to this place, and they have like a small venue spot for their people to come watch some band that could be signed to see, do they put on a good show? You know, how are they with, you know, whatever. They just want to see us play and see if we can put on an exciting show and if we're worth anything, which is fine. It's cool to showcase what you do. But we're on tour and we're 500 miles away from there. And they're like, oh, we'll cover your gas. Don't worry about it. Just come do the thing. We want to see you guys play a show, and none of us can get out there because we're working. Okay, fine. We have a day off. We'll work it. We'll get up there. But we really need the gas money. We're not making a lot. We're a new band, blah, blah, blah. No worries. We got you. So we get there, we do the thing, and then like looking around, like, is Tony here? And they're like, oh, Tony's not coming. He said he was coming. He wanted us to do the showcase. Why isn't he here? Oh, I don't know. He had he's just not here, but I'm whoever it was. He's like, I'm the guy. You know, I'm like, if Tony's going to say yes, I'm going to say yes. So if I think you're worth it, then, you know, I can get you on, no big deal. And we're like, all right, cool, whatever. No, he was like, you guys are great. And we were like, well, we don't want to be weird, but Tony said he would cover the gas because we drove from this state here and we have to drive straight back there now. And he's like, what are you talking about?
Oh,
shit. We were like, Tony said he would, like, you know, cover the gas because we just drove really far. We're in the van and we're on tour right now. And they're like, he's like, hold on. And he goes and asks a couple other people. Nobody, he didn't say anything to anybody about it. We were like, all right, so we'll email him. And they're like, yeah, just email him and we'll get it worked out. Never worked it out. Oh, never, no. Paid for that. So, I mean, we got through it. It was fine. But that was just kind of like one thing where we probably should have been like, I don't know. But at the same time, Victory was the only label looking to sign us. So we just went with it.
Now you're with Nuclear. How was that? I'm sure it's fucking
so a world much of difference. Better.
Yeah.
A world of difference. They're owned by metal fans. Like,
yeah, it's, dude, they're huge. They're, you know, you got fucking Cradle of Filth, you got fucking Die Artist,
Sugar,
dude, yeah,
that, Arch that, Enemy.
That like, label is,
you name the band like in death metal right now, like Nuclear probably has them. If Metal Blade doesn't, Nuclear does. So was we met the actual owner, because Nuclear Blast is a German company, so they have their U.S. stuff, but the actual owner, this dude Marcus, I forgot what city he lives in, but that dude is out of his mind. Dude is fucking crazy. Love him in a great way.
Right.
He's just like, he's an intense metal fan, and he's German, so he drinks. So he likes to get fucked up, and he likes to go to metal shows. But he came to our show when we met him, and he came to the show. He brought his fucking Sony Handycam, and he was just, he just got hammered drunk, and he's in the pit with his fucking Handycam, like, filming us, and he like got up to the front. He's like getting right in our face, just like, yeah, he's yelling. And and the day we met him, he took us to their offices, which are fucking sick. Like, they have this like lounge room for the employees that's upstairs, and it has a full surround sound system put in all over. So anywhere you go, if you put music or whatever on this thing, you can hear it all over. There's a pool table. There's a life-size Batman statue. There's a life-size Spider-Man hanging in the ceiling.
That's wicked.
The floor is carpeted with a Nuclear Blast logo. There's couches, HDTV. Like, it's a fucking huge, amazing, sick lounge. And then not only that, he has his, his own fucking paint pinball collection. He has like an area of like office buildings that he bought out, and it's just a floor full of pinball machines. And he has a life-size Terminator 2 statue of Arnold with like some of his skin's gone, so the metal
endoskeletons on it. Cool, yeah.
Like, the dude loves Batman, Spider-Man, and Terminator and pinball. Like, he has a pinball machine from 1960 whatever up to now. He probably has a few million dollars worth in just pinball machines. And at the time, he had a brand new Porsche Cayenne Turbo S that he drove us to the spot in from that office to the pinball. And we got in, and he put, at the time, Until I Feel Nothing was out. That was our album out at the time. And he put that on, first song, full blast with all of us in the car in this Cayenne Turbo S, white, like 800 horsepower V8 fucking monster car. And he's like, yeah, we're going to go over to the pinball place now, and you guys will love it. And he, like, as soon as like the last door shuts, he just stomps on it. We're just like, and there's a fucking roundabout coming up, and I'm like, this dude's about to just jump this fucking roundabout. And he slams on the brakes, and he's like, and we were like, oh God, we're going to die, 'cause it's like raining, but whatever. And then we went back to the venue, and he took Scott to his house. Scott was like, that dude lives in a fucking mansion. Like, he was like, oh, he walked shit. In. He's like, I felt like I was walking into Fresh Prince of Bel-Air's house. Like, he's like, he dude lives in man. And then he took Scott on the freeway in his, 2013 Porsche 911 Turbo S.
Holy fuck, what he said. That was like,
nuts. Scott was like, I think we were going like 200 miles an hour, dude. He took him on the Autobahn, and he's like, I thought he was going to fucking kill me. He was like, yeah, just get in the car. And then, bro, he's just racing down the Autobahn, and Scott's like, I hope I make it to the show.
Right, I bet you that bitch was roaring, dude.
Oh, yeah. I wish I could have gone with him. I like cars, too. Scott and I are the car guys. We like Porsches and BMWs and stuff. So I was like, that must have been sick. I've always wanted to ride in a Porsche. But that was cool. Yeah, so the dude's fucking out of his mind, but he's a super fan, and he loves like all metal. He just wants heavy bands, and he just wants bands to be successful. And it shows, because, you know, the LA company or the LA portion of Nuclear Blast we work with, like, they're 100% behind all of our ideas, you know, and they want us to take the band where we want it to go. You know, as long as it's good. I mean, they're not going to, if we give them some shitty music, I'm sure they'll tell us it sucks, but they really like, we just finished doing these four songs for the new record. We just tracked them early because we're going to release some singles here in a little while. And so the four songs we just tracked, those are going to be the first four singles, I think, or at least we're thinking they might be. So they've just heard all those and all the feedback we got from everybody at the office. Like, this shit's fucking brutal. You guys are doing an amazing job. I can't wait to hear the rest. So
yeah.
Let's hope the fans like it.
We'll jump right back to that, man. For when you're on tour, what's a typical routine like for you when you guys are out on the road?
Like a day.
Yeah, just like a day in the life with you.
Well, I mean, it kind of depends on the drive. If it's a long drive, we usually go straight to the venue. Otherwise, like if we're in the van driving ourselves and we get into town early, usually hit a Starbucks or like a Firehouse or, you know, something.
Yeah.
Usually just wake up like so. Yeah, if we have the time, I love to just get up, grab a coffee because can't make coffee in the van. So you go to Starbucks, grab one nice cold coffee, and then, but it's usually, aside from that, it's usually just roll up to the venue, open the trailer, get the gear inside. If you're not headlining, get the gear inside on the floor. If the headliners and all them say it's cool, like you know, you got to get the okay from the TM and stuff. So usually it's just same with everybody, pretty much. Roll up to the venue, get your gear inside, set up your chill space outside by your van. And then hang out. And when the headliner's done, you build the stage with everybody and then run lines and get everything ready and just set everything up. And then you just sit and wait for your turn.
Pretty typical then.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a whole lot to do. If it's the bus, then it's wake up, load in, make coffee. Then once load in's done, it's watch TV and make food and chill or play video games or whatever. Just either sleep or pass the time until you play.
What's the craziest or, you know, wildest thing that you've seen on tour, whether it was you or something that you just experienced?
Man, there's been a lot of crazy shit. Some of it I can't talk about. Just because you don't want to, I mean, you just don't want to be like, hey, yeah, this person was doing this, you know.
Yeah.
No, you don't know if that person wants that event told, even though it was funny or whatever. But oh man, there's always just so many. And then sometimes, like, I know, like, I'm thinking of a couple crazy things, but I know there's crazier things. Well, one thing that I still think is pretty fucking crazy is when we played in Russia for the first time in 2008, they had these security guards on stage, which is fine to keep people from fucking up the gear because it wasn't our gear. Some of it was, but we were borrowing shit. And so, but it's like every time someone gets on stage, you just shove them right off. There's no chance for a stage dive or anything. And I'm a fan of flashing. I'm sure every dude is.
You said what?
Flashing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, a little couple titties at the shows, but nice. So, right. But no, this like really hot chick gets on stage, she just takes her shirt off. And we were just like, yeah.
Just lets them hang
out. This fucking security comes up right behind her. Just shoves her right off stage. I was like, what the fuck, dude? I was like, she's not doing anything. And like, you don't want to look at tits? Right. What's wrong with you, dude? Fuck? It's crazy. But that's not the craziest. But that's some crazy shit that I can think of right now. I'm struggling to think of crazy shit right now. These are great questions for the group because there's always one person that remembers something crazy where we go, oh. And I'm not always that guy. Man, I can usually think of crazier things. Fred threw a couch out of a window on tour once. Yeah, because we were drinking and the venue said we could hang out. And then they said we couldn't. And all the drunk people were like, fuck that. So him and like two other people threw a couch out of a window. I don't think the venue guy was very stoked on that.
It's funny, though.
It's crazy.
Besides that, what's a conflict or a failure that you faced while being a musician, and what did you do to make a comeback?
I don't know. I mean, music-wise, I don't feel like I've ever failed.
That's good, though, man. That's really good.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess I'm lucky. I don't know. Like, I've never really tried to step beyond what I feel I could do, and I've never tried to learn anything I'm not interested in. Which kind of sucks because I don't know how to solo or sweep, or I don't know theory. I don't know how to rip it like those fucking super shredders and shit. But that's just because that stuff never interested me.
Carnifex ever doing a sweep in songs, you know, like.
Well, I mean, Jordan did them. Like, they're all over Slow Death and World War X and all that stuff. That was what Jordan brought. And that was like something he likes and he practiced. But I don't know. I just never listened to songs that had that stuff. I know. Like I said earlier, my intro to non-rap music was Weezer and Offspring. So, you know, and I learned, you know, I spent my time learning Deftones songs and 311 songs and Slipknot songs. And there are solos in some of songs from those bands, but not when at the age when I was learning them, they weren't doing that stuff. It was all riffs. And that's what I like. So I never went to learn that other shit. But now that Jordan's gone and I'm the only guitar player, I have to learn that shit. It's kind of hard because I'm not learning that stuff. I'm just learning the solos that were written. So I don't understand the idea, the theory, and the structure behind what was written.
So Jordan, when did Jordan leave with the, from you guys?
End of 2019. God. That's almost crazy. Said end of last year, but it's already been 2 years. Jesus Christ.
What's the reasoning that he left behind? Are you able to talk about that?
Personal stuff. Yeah. It's just, I think, I don't know if he expected something different out of the band thing or, you know, just whatever it was, but he's more of like, you know, like a family kind of guy, do stuff at the house, wife and kid, wants wife and kids kind of thing.
Okay.
I think just touring's kind of chaotic, you know, like the tours. So your work is whenever it is, it's not Monday through Friday and then you get the weekend off. You know, it's not a normal thing. Money is not guaranteed every 2 weeks. You know, sometimes you got to wait, especially with Europe for some reason. They're fucking wiring. Like our last European tour, we got a little bit of money from just Euro exchange stuff, but we had to wait like months to get our guarantee money. And we really needed it because
absolutely.
That tour ended and COVID hit. And so we the tour after that was not a little, it was a couple months away, but we didn't know it was going to be canceled. But like we got the rest of that money right before that tour. And that was like, that's months. And I don't know why it takes so long sometimes, but it does. And it's a fucking, it's a nail biter because it's like getting a tiny portion of your paycheck, and then a few months later, you'll probably get the rest of it. if it goes through, like it's just like, God damn it.
Yeah.
So I mean, it can be really hard to be, you know,
To keep, be patient,
keep being yourself, and to have that stability that some people can't live without. And unfortunately, the women he was meeting were fine with it, and then they weren't. It's like, when are you going to stop touring? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, there's not a plan.
This is my fucking job. And then, you know, and they can't hang it. And they fucking, you know, they realize, oh, well, he's just going to keep leaving and stuff, you know, and that's hard on people.
Yeah.
And it happened to me. It's happened to Scott. You know, it happens to everybody. You know, people think like, oh, well, this is just like a thing. You know,
yeah,
and that's the huge problem is that most of our families and stuff too, like, how's your band? Like, what do you mean my band? It's not how's my fucking band. I'm not playing the fucking karaoke bar every fucking Saturday. It's my goddamn career. I have a fucking job. Fuck you. And like, I know they don't mean bad, but it's like my aunt asked me that stuff. Other people that when I see certain family members, how's your band? You mean my fucking career?
Right.
How's the thing your I've job? Been doing for 13 fucking years that I'm living off of? Yeah, it's great. Like, will you please take me fucking seriously? Just because I don't go to a fucking cubicle every fucking week, like
right, from 8 to 5, 9 to 5,
it doesn't mean that I'm not working. Like, yeah, sorry, my job's fucking amazing and I get paid. I'm sorry you have to go to fucking work. Sorry you have to call your life a job. Yeah, my band is great. We're making money and seeing the fucking world. I'm getting paid to play guitar and party. So, yeah, it's great. My band is awesome. How's your band? Right. How's your fucking church group? Fuck you.
Let's go back to what you said about those singles in the new album that you guys are in the works of. Can you talk much about that?
No.
You don't have, I mean, have any release, like as far as the singles, you don't have any pinpoints on that?
We are going to release a single very soon. Ooh. That's about all I can say. I don't remember what we have told everyone, because we had some of our Patreon podcasts that we played We played a few songs for a Patreon group. It was a very small, like 12, 13 people. So, but I don't remember if Scott said anything on social media about anything, but I can say we have four songs tracked, legit tracked. They're done. I think they're mastered now. And then, very soon a single will come out. And then soon after that, another single will come out. But I can't say much more than that. Because the first single is like a huge surprise. And we're going to do a little build up for it and everything. And it's not just a song. So, but you'll see what I mean when it comes out. Man. Like, oh, that's why you can say it. I don't want to blow the lid off the fucking surprise. You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know
I'm not going to Tom Holland this motherfucker.
I know a lot of people, you know, they're always going to take pride in whatever they do. But in your opinion, what can you say about these new single and this new material that's coming up compared to what you guys have previously done?
It's better than anything we've put out in the last few years.
So it's really
Die Without Hope and Slow Death were fantastic. I think World War X did not hit the mark. I don't think it hit the mark with fans that well, and I definitely didn't hit the mark with us. And it was just circumstances of the situation of getting that album written and done. When we started writing it, I learned my dad had multiple myeloma, which is like a blood cancer. And he has COPD, and he went to the hospital, and he had a tumor on his head that he had to have removed. It was just a whole lot of things happened at once with him. And while him and I aren't super close, it still sucks because I'm not trying to be a fucking downer right now, but
no, you're good.
I lost my mom when I was 12, and then I've been living with my dad since then. So if he goes, I don't have a lot of family connections. So when he's gone, it's kind of it. I have a half sister, but I don't know her that well. We never grew up together. I knew her when she was 2, and then I didn't see her again until she was 11. And then I didn't see her again until she was 18. So it's just like,
yeah, big time.
And she lives 10 minutes away from me. And we were just talking the other day where it's like, we want to hang out more and we need to get together more. We need to develop a bond.
Yeah,
but
yeah, absolutely.
I'm 40 years old. She's 23 and we don't know each other. This is really fucking
hard. It's going to be tough. Yeah.
So when we started writing that, I was not doing well. So sitting down and writing was like the last thing on my mind. And it was like when I had good days, they were half as good as my actual good days. And
yeah,
when I had
bad
days, they were like the worst. So unfortunately for World War X, I really didn't write a lot. What was it? Hellfire. That song was one song that I have riffs on and I don't have anything else on the record. Basically, I think I have a breakdown or something and I hate myself for it because that's not me. But this record was all written by me and Sean, produced by Scott, and then all the bass stuff was done by Fred. So anyone who may be feeling like we were going somewhere different and we're not really like ourselves anymore, this album is bringing it back. If you're missing the old days of Carnifex and how we used to be, that shit's coming back right now. This is an album that is 100% classic Carnifex because it's written by the people that wrote the first three albums. Yes, Disease and the Poison and Hell Chose Me, we had Ryan, and he wrote a lot, but still Sean and I did the majority. And Sean's our like arranger, and then Scott's like our producer. So like I write a bunch of riffs, and the way I write is kind of sort of song structure-y. So if I write a riff, the next riff I write will be something that goes with that riff.
Yeah, as it
goes on, it's like putting a puzzle together. So I make the pieces and they have to fit together. And then I give that stuff to Sean and he'll take the pieces apart, cut them, and he'll make those pieces fit with these other pieces. So then he takes my puzzle and he builds another puzzle off of that. So then it's still the same image, but with new pieces. And then Scott takes that puzzle and he shapes it and he makes it different. This is just how I imagine it. It's just kind of like I build a thing and then Sean makes that thing bigger and better. And then Scott makes that thing polished out and, you know, like, oh, this is kind of this edge rough. Let's make it smoother, you know. And then Fred puts that coating on it, like all the bass stuff, any bass line you hear, that's Fred's brain. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, yeah, man. Like, me and Sean write riffs, and Sean organ and arranges. So that's kind of how Carnifex used to write, and now we're back to that.
So
we're very tracking exciting. It. We're writing it. Yeah, and we're all really excited too. I haven't been this pumped on a record in a long time.
What was your guys' last record that you guys put out?
World War X, 2019.
2019. Okay, so it hasn't been too long. I know a lot of bands out there haven't put stuff out like since 2017 or 2016, and it's definitely time, you know. But yeah, man, I'm real stoked to hear the new stuff for sure.
I mean, we're digging it. I'm gonna toot my own horn a little bit here. When we tracked, so what you guys are gonna hear on these songs is actually a tone that I made in the Kemper that Scott and Sean and I refined when I went to track these four songs. So this whole album not only is going to be me playing everything on guitar, Fred's doing the bass, obviously, but it's a tone that I made. Like, so this is going to be like the first Carnifex album that is 100% on guitars anyways, me. It's me playing. It's my tone. It's my guitars. It's all me.
It's and all it's authentic.
And it feels good because it hasn't been that way since... I mean, Dead in My Arms was the only time I did that before because... Oh, no. Until I Feel Nothing, I tracked everything too. But Dead in My Arms is kind of funny because that dude Travis I mentioned way back when I was talking about seeing the band, he came and tracked his side of that album. And then when I... But at the time, he had a Line 6 Flex Tone 2, which was like top of the line solid state head at the time. Sounded sick. And he had an ESP Viper, or not a Viper, an Eclipse that had EMG 8185s in it. And I didn't have anything cool like that. I had a $300 Ibanez 7 string with whatever the pickups are in it, and a PV6505 head that I didn't know what to do with at the time. So he tracked his stuff. And we were like, oh, this is sick. And then I plugged my guitar in on whatever settings I had. From the exact moment I hit a string and it came through the monitors, I went, Travis's guitar sounds like shit. What the fuck? We went back, so I tracked like a riff, and then we A-beat him, my guitar and that guitar. And his guitar was quiet, soft, it had no balls, but it still had the grit. So that's why we were like, oh, this sounds great, because it had that grit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why does his tone sound so shitty? It doesn't sound like that. It usually sounds really good. And the guy was like, did you check the batteries in the guitar? I didn't know an active pickup existed at that time. I had no idea you could put a battery in a guitar and it would power the pickups. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, he's got EMGs. He's probably got a dead battery. I was like, where's the battery? What are you talking about? He goes, open the back. There's a little battery. I was like, what, the battery? And he's like, yeah, it's like a preamp. And then now I know. But so then I took the battery, I put it to my tongue, no juice, not one bit of anything. Like it was drained. So we put a new battery and turned his head back on. And I went, chun. And it was like a night and day difference. He was like, well, we can't keep those things. And Travis wasn't coming back. So deleted all of his shit. And then I picked up his guitar and we just hit play. And in one evening, I retracked all of his guitar stuff after doing all of mine. So in like 2 days, I tracked my shit and retracked his shit. So Dead in My Arms is all me playing on the guitar there too, which is crazy. So, but yeah, this record will be the first time in a long time that it's been purely OG Carnifex written. And I think it's going to show.
Yeah.
It's going to show because this is literally like the sound that comes out is literally what happens when Sean and I get together and make riffs. This is literally what happens. So I'm just really excited to have everybody hear it, and I hope everybody likes it. Oh, I know Nuclear Blast is super stoked on it. So if they like it, y'all.
Yeah, if they like it and they get a good impression of it, then that's got to say something, you know.
And they get to hear everybody's stuff before it's out. Lucky bastards.
Yeah, I know it. Fuck.
I wonder, like, I kind of wish I had contact with somebody there, like directly, like Scott does, because I want to be like, yo, when the next time you guys get Meshuggah premixes, should go ahead and CC me on that fucking email. I want to hear Meshuggah songs before they're done. I want to hear raw tracked Meshuggah
songs. Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
And just to be like, yo, there's a Meshuggah album coming out and I got the jams. I'm like, what? I can't play them for you because they're not mixed. Ah.
That'd be something else, man. Well, Corey, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me tonight and going over some Carnifex and going over, especially with the gaming and stuff. That was pretty cool. And
yeah,
you guys are definitely one of my go-to bands, and I've seen you guys a couple different times. Before we jump off here, is there anything you want to say to anybody listening?
I don't know. I always just want to thank every time I get a chance. I want to thank every fan, anybody who has ever gone to a show, bought a shirt, bought a CD, fucking asked for an autograph, asked for a picture, fucking threw me a high five, whatever, you know, like I said before, you know, I learned guitar because I didn't have friends. You know, I don't really have friends now because people don't understand touring and they can't hang you being gone a lot. You know, people, you know, you think a month isn't really that big a deal. It's not that long of a time, 30 days, 35 days, it's really not that long, but sometimes you leave for a month and you come back and things change. Life's different for other people and you're trying to pick up where you left off when you left, and it's not easy. It's really hard sometimes, and you feel like, I don't know, it's hard to explain, like if you've ever played a show or anything, and that feeling of standing in a room or on front on stage or whatever and there's hundreds or whatever people, the feeling of that, and then when it's just over and they're all gone, it's like it's a really weird feeling. And sometimes it's, I don't know, sometimes it doesn't matter. And then other nights you're just like, you stand there and you're just like, and even though you have your bandmates, whatever, you just feel alone.
I get you, man. I used to be an over the road truck driver. So I understand you completely, man. You know, going out for, I was only doing weeks at a time, but I was only home for 48 hours each stretch that I was home. So like, only being home for 48 hours, having my wife and my son at home, and she was pregnant with my daughter, like that took a huge toll on me. And thankfully now I'm a local dump truck driver, so I don't have to worry about ever missing any time at home. But man, being in that truck, you know, sometimes like on a Tuesday, knowing that I've got, you know, a couple more days left, and when I want to be home, I'm states away and I can't just, you know, leave whatever load I've got on me. Say I'm in Texas, you know, I can't just go couple hours back up north just to be back in Indiana just because I want to, you know. I'd love to, but you know, it's the reality of just being an adult and just can't do it. It does suck, man. So I totally get you. Totally get what you mean.
Yeah. And then like, you know, like when you grow up, you have a bad day at school, you go home.
Yep.
You have a bad day at work, you go home. And you have a bad day on tour driving trucks, you just go find a place where there's no one else so you can fucking punch something or just have a quiet thought for a fucking minute, you know. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, just don't want to thank anybody for sticking around through all this bullshit, and you know, we find a lot of comfort knowing that people find reason in our music, and that, I don't know, music got me through a lot, and knowing that our music gets other people through stuff is a good thing. It's a good feeling to know that I've helped make a difference the way other people help make a difference in my life. You know, like the band 311, they're one band that, like, I don't know, I have a really hard time with moods and stuff. And I don't go, if I'm in a bad mood, I don't go back to a good mood very easily at all. But 311 is one band that I can put certain albums on and my entire mood, my demeanor changes. Everything's different and it helps a lot. So knowing that other people can find that in our music is fucking awesome.
Dude, I
know we have a lot of, we have a lot of military guys that deal with a lot. And sometimes hearing those guys talk about their problems and like makes my shit sound trivial, but just, I don't know. Just anytime someone's like, man, your music, fucking, you know, when I have a bad day at school, I put you guys on and blah blah blah, and that's, you know, that is all I ever really wanted, was that to be able to give back, you know, for the older bands that helped me out when I was younger. Now I'm an older band helping other people out when they're younger, and you know, yeah, this is a good thing. We're all going round and round here, and if we can help each other out in any way, it's great, you know. And I'm not good with money, so I don't have a lot of it to hand out, but I got good vibes, you know, and I always try to help people when I can. So
yeah,
you know, a lot of other people might say no to a smaller podcast like this or something, but
yeah,
I don't really care. I just like to get out and talk to people about the experience. And anytime I know there might be a fan who doesn't know how much we appreciate them, might be listening or something, and then they can hear it for whatever outlet they find. That's great.
So, yeah, dude. Like you said, I can't tell you, there's only been a handful about, you know, I ask a huge variety of people to come on, and there's only been a handful that, you know, the typical, they just won't reply, which is cool. You know, I'm not trying to hound on them or nothing, but what I thought was kind of strange and kind of dickish, I guess, was the people that ask what my listener status is and what my audience volume is, and that determines what, if they want to come on or not. And I'm just thinking, if I'm asking you, you know, and you're in a band, like, I don't know, like I've asked people, I guess I won't name drop, but bigger type of bands, you know, I'm just thinking, you've already got such a good following right now, and you've already got, you know, I'm sure you get good album sales and your merch is doing good and everything because you're at where you're at now. What's one podcast interview going to hurt? You know, like, why does it have to determine
if that person just goes out and goes, hey, I'm on this podcast. It's like, okay, you got like what, 125,000 followers. If 10% of those people see your post, then it's hundreds of people that are going to go see your podcast interview. If that's so fucking important to you, like, I don't care how many people see anything, you know, like, I'm doing this for people trying to, like, obviously, like, you're trying to make this like your business or something, right? Or a job, maybe. Or
I'm just doing it just on the side, just for fun, you know, because I love, like, the bands that I interview. I love the guys, you know, so I want to talk to them. And my main purpose is just to get an insight on my favorite bands, on stuff that I've always wondered, like with the whole Drama of Blood, you know, stuff like that, just to get an insight. Whoever wants to listen to it, cool, man. I hope some other people have the same kind of questions that they've always thought about, and they get their answer from it, or they just want to hear their favorite bands talk about stuff, you know? Yeah. So, like, I just thought that was crazy. They're like, yeah, well, what's your audience and stuff like that. And that's the point where I'm just like, and that's not the intentions that I have.
I could understand a question like that from someone like somebody in Metallica.
Yeah.
Who's actually busy.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But I mean, if you're asking, like, I'm not saying that you did, but like, if you're asking like a Tosin or somebody of same realm that I'm in, like, because you listen to us, so I assume there's going to be, you know, Tosins and like other people that are in similar genres and stuff that you ask. And like, I'm not saying he would say no, and he's not a dick, I love that guy, but if you were like at that kind of level, which is clearly above us, and you're just like, you're just a little above what like all of us are, and you're like, what's your listener base, and we're like, are you really that busy, dude?
Right
You don't have a fucking hour right now. Right, an hour,
exactly.
And this flew by. I mean, all we're doing is fucking chatting. So it's like, you can't sit, like, you sit down and chat with people all the time. Like, hey, did you not just spend an hour talking to someone yesterday? Just do that again. Like, it's not that hard.
And that's what happened. That's an exact example of what happened with the band I won't say, but they their PR was like, no, we're not sending interviews up. And I'm like, well, I talked to two of your members. They said that they're ready to go and they're cool. They just need you to set the time up. And their reply was, I am not setting up interviews. And the next thing I see, oh, I'm so excited, I'm doing a podcast with Jamie Jost on his podcast. I'm just like, what, just because he's in Hatebreed and he's got a bigger following, that makes a big difference versus just doing a regular podcast with a regular dude?
I don't even see the point. Like, why does it matter? Like, if that matters to you, then you're someone who has a numbers thing going on.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That means your numbers are somewhere higher than what is normal, so you have to get a gauge on that. But is doing that going to diminish your numbers? Like, no.
Right. Is it going to make people like, oh, wow, I don't want to listen to, you know, I'm not going to listen to them just because,
like,
they did a podcast with somebody I don't know.
And if this isn't like a big time established podcaster, then they're clearly a fan of yours and they do something for other people that listen to their podcast and they want to just get an insight to you. Like, this is a fan asking you to do something for a minute to help them out and to talk to them. Like,
yeah,
okay. Like, and right now, like, if I said no, it's like, what the fuck else am I doing?
Yeah,
I'm gonna be sitting in this fucking chair all day anyways. Right. Like, literally before you called, I was watching a video of Courage JD calling Tim the Tat Man when he's drunk. That's what I was doing before this started. Like, granted, I was doing it just to kill a few minutes before this started, but I probably would have been doing that anyways because it's funny.
Right.
So I can pause the video and talk to you for an hour and then I can just go back into it. It's like,
right.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, I can see, like I said, I can see, like, if you're Metallica, if you're actually busy, yeah. And then you're like, okay, well, an hour of my time is, like, not that easy to, like, you're always doing this shit constantly. Like, an hour of your personal time is kind of a lot smaller at that angle, you know? Because especially even when those dudes go out to do normal things, there's a lot of people that at that level, you're not going anywhere without getting bothered. So an hour of free time is way more valuable there. But nobody knows who the fuck I am, dude.
I'm going to
go to the car wash today. I'm going to go to Starbucks. I'm going to go grab some food. And not one person is going to ask me for a picture. And that's fine.
Unless it was me, dude, I'd be able to spot all of you guys out from a fucking crowd of people.
But I mean, it happens. How are you guys? It's rare, but it happens. Like, I went TV shopping with my dad long, long, long time ago. And the kid, some kid at Best Buy, like, walked by. He's like, "Well, you're Corey from Carfax." And I went, "Huh?" So who's talking to me? He's like, "Yeah, you're from Carfax." I was like, "Oh, yeah." And then he, like, pushed my dad out of the way. He's like, "Excuse me, man." And he's, like, talking to me. So I was like, "Hey, dude, just hey, boundaries, bro." Relax.
Well, yeah, man, like I said, I appreciate you taking the time and actually talking with me.
Yeah, man.
We'll definitely have to do this again and talk more about gaming because I definitely want to jump into that again with you.
You play Warzone at all?
I have it on Xbox One and I haven't really played a whole lot into it just because of the fact of the dad life and like being busy with work and shit. But I know like once the summertime hits around and I'm booming with money and you know I get off earlier at decent times and the kids are a little older and they're sleeping better and I'm definitely gonna hop back into it. Are you on Xbox One or PS5?
I'm on everything, but I mainly play PC now. I finally was able to, I mean, I used some unemployment, but I built a PC last year. It's only been like 4 or 5 months, but, I built it so I could stream. So I stream on Twitch. So if you want to stop by, I'm not trying to plug my channel.
But
honestly, yeah, twitch.tv/bootfxs. You can come by anytime. If you just go there and follow me, it'll let you know when I'm on live. You're welcome to come by, hang out and chat and ask me anything you want. I'm an open book on the stream.
I'm down.
I mean, obviously I'm not going to like spill the beans on secrets and stuff, but yeah, if you like just want to come by and chat and you see that I'm on and you got nothing to do, or you just like watching the kids and you want to fucking hang out, or you just are like wondering what I'm doing and you see me on, stop by, fucking ask chat questions, watch me fail at video games. It's great.
I'm sure, man.
I'm always down.
For sure, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, dude.
All right, I'll stay in touch, buddy.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
You too, buddy. Thanks.